What's up, everyone? We are here for PLL Happy Hour podcast, video, freeform, whatever you want to call it. Ready to rock. There's no format to this. It's just this stemmed from us having kind of a preseason catch-up about the Premier Lacrosse League and kind of turned into our weekly drinks and discussion about everything that's going on. What do you guys – well, first, let's do some introductions. Kevin, Dan Kaplan, and from the New England Lacrosse Journal, Kyle Devitt, the longest professional lacrosse analyst of all time. Guys, what are you guys drinking today? Kevin, with you.
Delaware's very own Dogfish 60 Minute.
I feel like you're always repping Delaware somehow. Amazing. It's literally the only thing.
Shirt. You're literally wearing a shirt that says Delaware. Yeah.
First date, best date, baby.
You might rep Delaware harder than anybody I've ever known.
Delaware, the Rhode Island.
Well, how many people do you actually know?
Part of the problem.
Right.
Dan Kaplan down in Howard County.
How we doing?
How are you doing?
I'm drinking Kyle's favorite commercial beer. The It's Your Cousin from Boston.
God. Don't make me do the Boston accent for the whole podcast.
Or just slip it in there. Cool. Just slip it in there when you start talking about the Cannons.
Well, if I have a couple of these, it'll happen naturally. I hate to break it to you. It just will happen.
So Kyle, you guys are both coming off of the end of your high school seasons coaching. So you guys are the ones who are, have the reason to have to. Kyle, what are you imbibing in tonight?
Got Harpoon Rec League with electrolytes. We just lost in the semifinals. I don't feel too bad about it though. Like Kaplan and I were talking earlier in the Slack, if you put everything into it, you don't feel as bad, like if you did everything you could and the team did everything they could and they still lost, like that's life. Like you can't make that any better,
Yeah, well, only one team ends holding a trophy. Everybody else ends off of a loss. Was it state semis or regional semis?
State semis, yeah.
Yeah, we were regional semis. So we were still a little earlier.
Yeah.
This is PLL Happy Hour, and the rule is what? If you're not happy, you have to leave? Is that what we decided on the slide?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Hey, let's bring the mood up.
We already hit it. If you feel the most out of your team, it's tough.
Yeah.
I've got some I'm repping Baltimore Union Divine IPA. Big fan of my IPAs, and I'll top mine off right now. This is going to be just a fun, look at the games and kind of talk about. We're all people who love pro lacrosse and have watched long periods of time, and we're just kind of happy it's back and want to talk this kind of informal roundtable format. I think we're going to have people kind of hop in and out week to week. Guests, just have a lot of fun with it, do something different. But this weekend, it's hard to believe that it's back. And I don't know, like how you were there in, I'm not sure which days you were there in Gillette, but you were there
just Sunday.
Well, it kind of dawned on me like midway through the weekend that like this isn't a bubble anymore, these are games in front of crowds, it's a traveling thing that's going to be in different cities.
Yeah.
The bubble was really cool, and I thought like we're on a little bit of all lacrosse fans at least like an escape from what was going on and something to do on those weeknights. But we're back fully in it. What was it like to be in there in person?
So I actually felt the same way until I walked down to the field, which by the way had to be 110 on the turf. It was like, you could feel it was hotter on the ground than it was in the air. And I was just on the sideline. I walked down for Chrome Redwoods. I actually have like a full minute of the first minute of the game, like on my phone. And I was just like, I used to do that all the time and it didn't matter. Right. Like at old school MLL, I've been covering it for so long and I didn't think it was a big deal. And then I was there again and I saw Kyle Harrison score. And I went, dude, Kyle Harrison scored like in front of me. Like he could come by and like that kind of like giddy feeling that you get that like I haven't gotten for like a decade. And I got it when I was on the field. It was like very high level, ball was spinning. It was great. I really enjoyed it. You know, I ambushed a couple PLL people on the sideline. I'm like, hey, what's up? I'm Kyle. And they're like, cool.
Sweet.
Which, Kyle, I'm like, Devitt. And they're like, oh. But no, I'm just kidding. Only one person did that. But it was great. It was a lot of fun. It's a fun event. I wish there was more people there, but like, I get it. You know, like, first game out, it's a little, you know, here and there. Massachusetts was really hit hard by COVID. Like, I can't imagine people are super comfortable going out to games 100% yet. And I think even in spite of that, it was still a very cool atmosphere and very cool games to watch.
Question number two. How weird does the field look with the 10 yards out of the middle?
Not as weird as the cutoff.
Oh,
They cut off on the other side an entire, like, huge swath where the broadcast and the benches were. So I was not on that side. I was on the other side where the cameras were. But the production was on the other side. And that looked weird from the press box. If you see it, it's, like, cut out. It looks very different from when NCAA tournament games were played there. But, you know, you don't notice it until you see a guy dodge that's used to having 10 more yards of space. And then you're like, where's he going? Oh, he can't go nowhere. Oh, he's got to move the ball. Oh, no.
He doesn't know where he's going. Yeah.
Yeah. That happened a lot for the Water Dogs in the Atlas, I'll say. Well,
Kyle, you saw the other Kyle's goal. Now, let's start there. We were kind of chatting last week. And that's when, you know, it kind of really came out that this is going to be Harrison's last year. And I think we all kind of shared some reaction then, but, you know, I think it's worth talking about right now. I'll start. I overlapped in high school with Kyle. I went to Curly. He went to Friends. You know, I think we overlapped by 2 years. I'm a lacrosse person growing up. You know, I didn't, like, grow up with a stick in my – I think everyone thinks that if you're from Baltimore, you grow up with a stick in your hands. No, you don't. Like, it's, you know, in certain communities, but not in others. Picked it up in high school, my sophomore year of high school, and Kyle Harrison was the star. He was the guy who was always in the Baltimore Sun. You know, the Hopkins broadcasts were always on ABC 2 News. And he was just, like, the guy who made lacrosse look cool and, like, look like, oh, man, like, I can play this. And, like, you know, it's cool and I can make something happen. You know what I mean? Like, I can be like, he provided an accessibility to it that was just so awesome. And I always felt like it was so cool that, like, you know, my lacrosse career overlapped his in a lot of significant ways. And then kind of now as I'm older, you know, he's got kids, I got kids. And, like, you know, kind of, I remember leaving when the Ohio Machine won the MLL championship the next day, and I was up at some ungodly hour getting a flight out of there, and everyone was out all night the night before, but, like, I think 5 or 6 in the morning, and there's Kyle Harrison, you know, waiting for the taxi like I was home to his family the next day. So it's kind of just fun how he's kind of overlapped, and he's just always made the sport feel like something that, like, and I don't want to say, like, he's made it feel like anybody can attain, because he's just an amazing athlete. None of us can attain what he did, because he's just physically that much better than all of us. But just his kind of approach and the way that he, you know, brings, whether it's geographically going to the West Coast or just whatever he does, he's just always one of my favorite players ever. So really happy to see that he's having his last ride, and I'm going to be cheering for him along the way. Dan, being, you know, kind of a Maryland guy, what are your thoughts on Kyle? And wait, we have a special guest here?
Yeah, boom. Whoa. I told you he would get in.
He's going to be our first guest.
Spring Central app was being a bitch. Oh, there we go.
What's up? Oh, Coach Childs in the house.
Coach Childs, how's it going?
I am doing well.
Brandon Childs, your college coach and PLL fan extraordinaire. Let's say that he's been, I know you were following this weekend, Brandon, we were actually about a subject that I think you will have some awesome input on.
All right, what do you got?
Kyle Harrison. What makes Kyle Harrison so special? What do you like about him just over the years, and kind of why is he, you know, such a revered in this sport?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, he's my age and he's still doing it. So that's pretty – I remember – so I grew up in Baltimore too, and I remember playing friends in basketball, and he just – it's like the first person I saw with the Jordan 11s. Like he just – he was just it. And then on top of it, like friends wasn't like a power. In like rec lacrosse, it was all about Cockeysville. He played at Lutherville. Like he was just kind of the man, and always kind of blazed his own trail. And another thing that's cool is like how many players. So for example, my assistant traveled to Ohio for like the Machine played Ohio State a couple falls ago, and it was Matt Witcher's like first introduction to pro lacrosse. And you know, he grew up like YouTubing, you know, dodging videos, and Kyle walked right over, you know, Witcher had been in the locker room for like 30 seconds, and Kyle walked right over and introduced himself and just kind of welcomed Matt to the experience and everything. So he has this way of, from what I can tell as an outsider, of just kind of welcoming everybody, which I think is unique to him in the world of like professional lacrosse stardom.
So knowing that story, I woke up the day after that he announced his retirement, and I bought 3 Kyle Harrison jerseys from the store. Yep.
Wow.
You are a dedicated fan.
One for another and one for my new. But yeah, but there's 3 of them on the way. He's just, that story kind of sums it up. There's not every PLL vet, MLL vet is doing that for every guy in the locker room. Kyle Harrison does. And of all of them that probably doesn't need to, it's probably him.
Yeah, just piggybacking off that, the first thing Jules Henningberg said after the Redwoods Sunday win was just the impact Kyle's had on his career. He was like the first one to reach out when he got traded to the Redwoods. So definitely checks out. I'll say for myself, I remember, so my older brother's the one, he's 7 years older than me. He had this huge Kyle Harrison poster up on his wall, and he kind of got me into this sport. So I'll just say like he's an inspiration to kind of everyone to get into the sport in the first place. So,
I have one very specific memory of him at Hopkins. What's your, I'm going to ask the question of what's everybody's like, boom, when you think of Kyle Harrison, his go-to moment, because I have a very specific one.
And it's definitely the semifinal versus Virginia, the jump shot after, and he goes right up to take the next face.
Yes.
Yeah.
The moment where Petromala looks at him and he looks back, and Petromala just says, go do it again. And he's like, okay, and goes, scrapes it, wins the face off again. Like that is, I would have find some sort of way to like get some sort of moving poster, like some sort of, what are they called?
NFTs.
Yeah, an NFT on my wall of that video and just have it repeat play.
I had the DVD of that, like, 05 run. And, yeah, I would just put that on replay.
I think I have those. Did you ever have those highlights of whole seasons in the mid-aughts? I have 5, 6, and 7. And I got them at, like, a garage sale in college. Like, they're
library.
Amazing. I still have them. I'm gonna burn them and put them in the Slack if I can. But
we have a whole box of them in the office that are just like the random like lacrosse DVDs of that era
that we
digitized. And like there's like the one that like was it like a Mikey Powell and Jay Jaubert like co-produced thing where it was like a like kind of like a surfing film on like 8mm.
It was like half like music video.
Yeah. We have that one. We have all kinds of like random stuff like that, that just like over the years we've acquired that. And like a whole bunch of VHS tapes of high school games that are in like Babo's old office. that we need to find something to do with.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's like definitely a lacrosse nerd's dream. Yeah. But let's talk about and that was, and let's start with the Redwoods. They're the 2-0 team. You know, they're the I won't go as far as say they're the best team in the league, but right now they're the team that has wins. We'll start with you, Kyle. What was your major takeaway from the Redwoods?
I was surprised at how much Pinnell scored. And they, like, called his number to let him score. You know, they, like, let Rob Pinnell be Rob Pinnell. And he had a new trick. He did a lefty drive jump shot with his right hand twice. I've never seen him do that. He is very much the other way, drive righty, fake that jump, and then take it to the outside pipe kind of guy. So I was impressed with that. I thought he'd be passing more, but he still, you know, filled the role for that. I mean, he leads the MLL in points with 9 after 2 games in the first week. So I think he earned them too. Like he looked.
Oh, you just said MLL.
Oh wow. Oh no. Paul, is that you?
Wait, is that a red dot?
No. Sorry, PLL. Sorry. When I talk about Rob.
Coach Charles, you mentioned one of his targets though, in a text to me, D3 guy, Ryan Lee. What did you see from him?
Yeah, I think Ryan Lee moves without the ball, like just nonstop, and but with pretty good purpose. And I think he is the key. If Pinnell's going to be the initiator, then Ryan Lee's the key to everything because he'll finish anything he catches. So Pinnell's either going to feed him for a one, but then if you have to slide to Pinnell and crash down, it's going to open skip lanes for Perkovic and Jones for 2. So I think Ryan Lee's, you know, maybe the missing ingredient to the Redwoods offense. If Pinnell's going to generate it. The other thing I think is cool about them offensively, I think it's very similar to the Whipsnakes what the Cannons are doing. If you're going to short stick Jules, then you get a lot of big little stuff opportunities. So you almost have to pull him. And then if you do that, you have to ask your short sticks to stop just size and athleticism mismatches with Miles Jones and Sergio Perkovic. So they're a challenging offense to match up with. I think the Cannons have kind of the exact same lineup recipe there. But Ryan Lee unlocks a lot of their ability to get 2s out of the 6-on-6, which is hard to do. Most 2s are coming out of transition, but 2-pointers out of the 6-on-6 is going to start with Lee on the inside and having a slide to Pinnell.
Did you ever prepare against Lee or play RIT when he was there?
No, the first time we played RIT, he had just left. So,
okay.
No, but they all kind of feel the same.
The other thing with Pinnell, I feel like he could have led the league in, you know, points last year and definitely assists. But every time he would draw attention and get them sliding, those up and overs that he was throwing last year were to Atlas midfielders who were just spraying shots wide.
Yeah.
Their shooting percentage from the midfield last year was abysmal. So those guys just not cashing in when they would slide to Pinnell. Like, he perhaps probably could have had – I don't know what the actual PLL stats would say, like his expected assists were last year, but it was probably pretty high.
I think the thing with that is that he still had 13 turnovers because when they stopped being able to finish his feeds, he would just get angry and drive.
Jam it.
And get doubled at GLE. And you didn't see – you. He doesn't do that this year because he's not frustrated. Like, happy Rob Pinnell is a great Rob Pinnell. Like, that's who everyone thinks Rob Pinnell is. But when Rob Pinnell gets upset, he just puts his head down and goes to annihilate you. Sometimes it works, too. He'll still get, like, 1 out of every 3 of those runs. He'll cash it in. But happy Rob Pinnell is very dangerous, and he looked pretty thrilled in both wins. So.
Yeah, I rewatched most of the Friday night game just because I thought that was by far the best of the opening weekend. And I mainly just watched Ryan Lee. He's so fun. Just if you zero in on him just off ball, he's very fun to watch. Like Coach Child says, it's like everything with purpose. But to plug Rosie's, Chris Rosenthal, his weekly column for this week got me thinking, just the amount of people that were benched this week, like Joe Walters being inactive when Charlie Bertrand isn't even there yet, just shows you just the amount of weapons this Redwoods offense has, and it's pretty remarkable.
Well, like overall, like this weekend, like I didn't think this were particularly good. You know, like when you look at all the games, like the first one was off. But like, I don't know, like I had just so much, and I didn't watch Sunday in real time. I've watched them over the last 2 days on Peacock. But I had so much fun watching all of them. Like they were all like, you know, they weren't particularly close or anything, but they were just like, feels good about everyone being under one roof that I don't know exact way to describe it is, but everything just feels right in the world with pro lacrosse right now. Am I like being too like out there, or does that sound true to anyone else?
No, the inner fan in me freaking loves it. Like the fact that I was able to like basically clear my weekend knowing that there's a bunch of games, or I mean, not clear it, but like plan my weekend around professional lacrosse games. Like that's awesome.
Yeah, you guys were talking about it in the Slack, and I was like, welcome. This has been the life for 15. I think it's great that pro lacrosse is finally getting the due. You know, like it's amazing. Like it is so much fun when it's played at, like if you look at the way the Archers played, that's an amazing pro lacrosse team. And they didn't just like win that game because they were better. They won it with like and stepped on the neck and kept going. Like that is a great team to watch. The Whipsnakes won their game because they're stacked at every position. They have a system. They have Rambo. They have Zed. They're moving the ball. Like they're great in transition. These are the kind of things that make pro lacrosse great. It highlights the best parts of the game. And that's why it's so fun to watch. I think people just go, oh, well, look at all the turnovers. Look at, you know, these guys aren't playing for real money, or like they all make like excuses not to watch it. You don't have any. It's so fun if you just let yourself have it, right?
And the way they did it, where they had mini camp and they used all of that week long camp to just put out all these highlights and all this content and generate all this hype leading into opening weekend. And then the Friday night game being a one goal game and being good, like that was so well executed on their part that like the fan in me is so excited for PLL this season. And I think that the way that they did that this year has a lot to do with it.
Brandon, well,
there was a lot of storylines, you know, leading up to it all. There's so many storylines that you could follow. And then to Kevin's point earlier, that the depth of talent. So like the Redwoods game, for example, Ryder Garnsey's playing midfield. And so I'm looking at it through the eyes of a coach, and I'm wondering like, okay, how does Ryder Garnsey fit in here? And so no matter who you are, you could be my 7-year-old son, you know, who has his favorite player. There's enough storylines there to entertain him. And then you can watch it through the lens of a coach and wonder like, I wonder how this is going to work out with Garnsey. Or, you know, Troutner started off kind of slow in the beginning of the game, and you're wondering like, all right, is he gonna, you know, settle in? And so as you can watch it through a lot of different lenses, which I think is cool. And I think Ryan Boyle does a really good job for like the real lacrosse, like enthusiast, you know, in terms of really analyzing each play with some pretty good detail that is a really entertaining and the 12-minute quarters too. It's not like the world's longest game, which I actually think is kind of a pro to viewership and everything. And I think when you combine all of that, the game almost ends with you wanting more, which I feel like sometimes the college game ends and you're almost like, all right, that was what I wanted, you know? And I think there's a little bit of a tease in that too, which has been fun. But like you, I found every game to be entertaining, regardless of how close it was.
Yeah, Brandon, I was going to ask you kind of to elaborate on that, but just like as a coach, like, you know, I feel like the pro lacrosse is like, I don't know if criticized or whatever of like, it just guys thrown out there doing their individual things. Like, how much have you been able to, like, look at it and appreciate it through your coach lens? And you kind of talked about it a little bit, but if you can, like, kind of elaborate on that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there are some teams that just kind of roll it out there and go. And then I think there's some that have, like, some serious systems. And you can almost, like, look at their roster and who they're dressing and how they're using them. And you can see it, like, wow, like, they've got a plan. And I'm sure all eight coaches have a plan. They're just in different stages of those plans. But I feel like the teams that have had the least amount of roster movement, or, you know, in the Redwoods example, like, they get Pinnell, but it was like the piece they wanted, you know, so he went out and got him and then built around it. But then there's some clubs that are still trying to, you know, figure some things out. And I think they're dressing people. This is my one knock on, and I don't even know that I have this completely accurate, because I don't think the PLL has really shared any of this yet. But I think in the days of the MLL, all the guys traveled and they practiced, and then they made the dress roster like the night before. And so you had other guys at practice to really practice, and you had time at practice to kind of prove yourself. Well, I don't think that's the case right now at the PLL. I think they're just sending the 19. And if that's the case, then the only way in which you can prove yourself if you're not on that dress roster is by playing in the game. And so if you have a guy that's outside of that 19 right now, number 22 or 23, and you want to see what it would look like to add him, you're going to add him in a game. And if it works, you won that game. But if it doesn't work, you know, there's a big risk reward to that. And so I find all that to be kind of fascinating. But I think from a coach's standpoint, I think it would be a big challenge to coach pro lacrosse. There's one ball and there's a lot of talented players. But I'm fascinated with that challenge. And I like watching and seeing what they're doing, which is cool. And I think I don't think Stagnita gets probably enough credit for how good of a job he does, because he has so much talent on that roster. But I definitely get the sense that the Whipsnakes are just the furthest along in their plan. Like, they know who they are. Each player knows their strength, but they also know the other guy's strength. And it's crystal clear when you watch them play. So.
They're also, I feel like, the only team, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, but who has two better dodging threats than Rambo and Zed Williams at attack? Like, there's nobody that can match up with both of them.
Archers, if you count six, all six?
Maybe.
Not just attack.
If you count all six,
like, no one touches them. It's just pure talent-wise. It's right. Hard to do that. But, yeah, no, that's fair. And the thing about how they use them, right? They use Rambo as, like, the guy to lean on. He's the guy that comes from X. And then they kick it to Zed, and Zed makes something out of nothing. So much that you're just like, how did he even, and it's like a quick dodge with him, and then it's in. It's like everything you yell at your players to do all season, and he just does it instantly. Like, you don't have to tell, you know, no one has to tell Zed Williams how to play lacrosse. No one has to tell him where to be. He always knows where to go. And that's why he had an impact. And when the way the Whipsnakes use him is so different from how he was with the Cannons. Because the Cannons used him when he was in the MLL as, like, their focal point. He's not a focal point. He's the end, right? He's the tip of the spear. He's not the entire thing. He's not the weapon. He's just the thing that kills you. And if you use him that way, it works. If you make him have to do all these other things, it doesn't work. And he gets overloaded and doubled. And next thing you know, he's on the wing chasing back a ball and trying to make like a 30-yard pass. You know, Whipsnakes use him perfectly. I've never seen such a turnaround in a player like in a long time. I can't remember the last time I saw a pro do that and be put in a situation to succeed to his skill set.
He's also this year a physical specimen, like with like his like weight training. Like, big. He, like, looks like he's just going to beat the hell out of people. Like,
but the thing – go ahead. I was going to say that the thing with the Whip Snakes, it, like, Zed doesn't have any kind of an ego, you know, and they're just, they have a lot of guys like that. Like Matt Dunn doesn't have an ego. John Haas doesn't have an ego, you know? And so the game with the Whip Snakes, the first quarter and the second quarter start off essentially the exact same. Nardella wins a faceoff. He's got Adler stuck on D. He dodges him and shoots it with his left hand off the post. The ball kicks out to, it would have gone in 9 out of 10 times. It doesn't. It kicks out to John Haas, who gets like the most fundamental John Haas first time ground ball. He throws the most fundamental John Haas pump fake and then shoots the most fundamental like overhand John Haas ball, and it goes in the goal, and they're up 1-0 in 10 seconds. And that had nothing to do with Rambo or Zed or any of those other awesome points you guys just made. It had everything to do with the fact that Nardella not only is the best faceoff guy, but he'll dodge you, and that John Haas might be like the best midfielder in the whole league that no one realizes is the best midfielder in the whole league. And then the first faceoff of the second quarter, Nardella wins it. But because he stayed and dodged Adler the last time, Adler now subs, and now it's 6-on-5, and they don't match up with – I mean, not Adler, with Nardella. And then they don't match up, and then Nardella steps in and stings it and scores. And so they score the first 10 seconds without Zed touching it or Rambo touching it in the first quarter because of Nardella, and then they do it in the second quarter. And then it's like, all right, well, we have to stop Nardella from popping it to himself. So that now they're going in, and then he can just put it right out to Earhart. It's just and because Zed doesn't have an ego, like Kyle was saying, he's just okay letting all of them be all of them. And they're going to be really tough. I don't know. I just feel like they're going to have to beat themselves, and they're not going to beat themselves. And yeah, that's where Shaq comes in.
You can't even make a case for injuries because they have backups on backups on backups, like everywhere. Oh, the backup guy. It's Kevin Reisman, the best guy in the MLL last season and one of the best faceoff guys in the league with the ball besides Joe Nardella. Like, you basically have like a mini clone of Nardella waiting to spell him if he dresses. It's great.
Yeah, and they're using the rookie out of Denver, right, as their second pole. Is that right?
Squires.
Yeah, I thought he was great off the ground when he's out there.
Kevin, you kind of did our team of the week. You led the charge on that this week. What was your major takeaway from the weekend?
Well, I think we're almost 40 minutes into this podcast, and we have not mentioned Lyle Thompson. And
who's that?
Just welcome to the Lyle experience, PLL. I mean, just to put a bow on the whole how excited we are as just genuine fans of the league. For him to score on his first touch was pretty incredible. And then, yeah, I mean, I think he could even force the issue even more, which I think he was trying to just work his way and into the offense a little bit, not make it all about him, which he knows he can do. But you see, like, the cannons come out with, after a timeout, in a minute left, down one against the Redwoods on Friday night, and he has the ball and he passes it. Like, I mean, I need him to just take it to the rack there. But selfishly, that's for me, for some Friday night drama.
And the possession before, they don't even use him. The possession before, they have the same opportunity. They go big little, and I think they said it with Drenner. I think they make Drenner the Dodger instead of Lyle. I'm like, you have Lyle Thompson on your team. I love Ryan. Everyone knows that. Coach Childs and myself, who both love Ryan, we both will admit that Lyle Thompson is probably better suited to go at it in that situation. Let's get him the ball. Make it the Lyle show.
Dude, he was shrugging off picks in the second game, though. He came alive in the second. Like, right, yeah, yeah, that was him trying to get his teammates involved. Second game, Lyle was, don't set a pick for me. Just get open. Like, him doing this, his head is like, go over there. I'm working. like in a nice way, in a very nice way, but
in the most respectful way.
Yeah, the most respect. But he definitely was like, "Get out of here! I got it."
Well, and I think
this is when you see. I think it was the third quarter. They scored like 3 quick goals. Drenner comes around X, fires it top side.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Short sticks. If we're going to short stick attackmen, let's at least be ready to go, right? Right? Are we just living
hey man, off there's no two slides till week die 4. On that? There ain't no slides till or two slides till week 4 every pro season. I don't care if it's MLL or PLL.
Unless you
if there's no health defense till week 4, when do the overhead checks stop?
Never. Never. I mean, it depends on the player, but usually never.
There are a lot of overhead check misses.
Yeah.
And I was just like, ugh, why? But, yeah, and then – so then Lyle passes it to Rabel, gets out of the way. He scores down the alley. I mean, they have some weapons if everyone's humming, excluding maybe Connor Busick.
The other guy that we haven't talked about for this team, and I'll kick it to Coach Childs, who I know wants to talk about this guy, is Steven Rafis. Coach, what makes him so good?
He is I thought he was the most important piece for their team. I think it's the exact same point I was making about Jules. I think Rafis is his like stop and go moves and his hesitation. He's scouted as a feeder, and rightfully so, but he scores a goal on the Water Dogs where he takes it to his right and he's got a step on Scarpello, and he probably could have just shot it. Most players would have just shot it. He had his step, his hands were free, and then he stops himself. You know, knowing that it's in his offhand and a little out of his range. So he kind of stops himself. Scarpello pulls up and then he re-goes. And as he does that, he kind of dips his head and shoulders low, which Ward bites on, and then dunks it high. And he did the entire thing with his offhand, which I think Rafis is probably scouted as being, you know, pretty heavy, primarily lefty, but just midfielders. I think midfielders that can pass this league are a premium. And then if you're scouted as a midfielder that can pass and then score on your own with, you know, you're all league. And I think he showed all of that in his debut. He's my front runner for rookie of the year. I don't even know who his competition is at this point, but he's definitely the front runner.
Not much.
Who's his competition, Kyle?
I didn't see any rookies that look particularly great aside from him, to be honest.
Well, TD.
Yeah. Those face-off numbers are not great. Not as great as everyone's making them out to be. Because if you watch those games, he didn't win all those draws. He was getting beat on draws.
Yeah.
But his wings came in and won a ton of those draws. So I'm not saying he did a bad job, but in terms of like the hype machine, if we're cranking that up, like let's see him do it like against Nardella. Let's see him do it against Baptiste. Like these are the people that I want to see him really like Hulk out on. And the other thing too, I was walking out and they had like a matchup thing on the monitor, and it's like TD's 5'9". I'm like, TD's 5'9"? What? Like I my brain didn't process that. And then I watched him go against like Carter Farrell, and I'm like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense now. Okay, yeah. So that made him more impressive to me. For some reason,
he did really well Friday night against Thomas Kelly, whose like percentage last year was not very good. And mm-hmm. I don't know.
That is also
they also didn't press him. They immediately went to Cimino. Like I don't know. TD,
I don't want to say he's going to struggle, but I think he's going to have a much harder time with Withers and Kelly and Nardella because of the after when the ball comes out. Like I don't think. Like, Withers is just going to, like, fight him, you know, like, just out-scrap him. I thought Kelly was awesome against Baptiste, was it? in the same regard. I thought Baptiste looked a little like slower and lethargic, but I think it was because Kelly was just like scrapping. I think a smaller, scrappier guy is going to give TD all he can handle. So I'm sticking with Rafus.
Yeah, it's fair.
I love it. I was at the Syracuse Hopkins game, I guess it was 20 season, where Rafus had like 9 assists or something like that, and just like basically like decimated Hopkins' season.
He's such a good feeder because
He's so good.
He feeds you open. Like, you can have a half step and the defender can have a stick on you, but if you have a half step, he can feed you one step farther out of the range of the check, and it's just on the money and such on a pinpoint that whoever is catching it, it's on their ear, so they can either shoot it right away or they can drop their hands. Like, whatever it is, it's just such an easy catchable like pass to their stick away from the defender, like literally like Peyton Manning or something.
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, for the Water Dogs, the Water Dogs have like DiNapoli is their guy, and he played awesome this weekend, but he started off on Busick, and then they had to make that switch, you know, and sort of to get DiNapoli on Rafus. But now you're asking a guy who's fresh to the league to go guard Paul Rabil and Connor Busick. And so it's the same problem with the Jules, Sergio, Miles Jones line. Like, if you're going to short them, you got to put your best one on them. So now you're asking the sixth best guy on that field to stop the best athlete on the field, which is tough. And so Rafus does all of that. Kyle, I got a question for you about is 52-second shot clock and the shorter field, just the PLL rules, does it take away the ability to short stick Andrew Q? Is there not even enough time to be able to get a short stick down on Q, bump a pole up, the double pole?
Here's what you got to do with Q. Don't slide off him. You can short him. Don't slide off him.
Right.
And that's all.
Is there enough time clock to actually? Is there enough time in the shot clock? Like, are they playing too fast to even get to that point? Is what I'm asking, because I think that's what you got to do. You got to short stick Q.
Yep.
You know, put two poles up there. But in college lacrosse, there's enough time in the subbing and everything that double pulling the midfield is rather easy, but I feel like in the pros, there's just not enough time to even get to it. But I think that's the plan moving forward if I'm playing the Cannons.
Yeah, it's definitely more difficult. And you see teams like pro lacrosse, and I've literally said this for like over a decade, pro lacrosse is all about matchups and getting the right matchup, right? So if you get the wrong one, that's where you go every single time, regardless of shot clock. I think the shot clock limits how often that happens, especially compared to college, where it's still a matchup game, but it's not as much of a pure matchup game as pro has always been. It's always been A versus B, show me what you got, let's go, one-on-one. And you saw a team this weekend do that too much. And that team was the Water Dogs, who put 5 guys on one side of the field and then like watched another guy dodge. You have to move, you know, like you can't wait for that guy to dodge and draw a slide. If you pulled everyone over here, you know, it just didn't, that kind of offense doesn't work. You still need to bang it to the corners and get a touch. And with the shot clock, that's the hard thing for teams to adjust to, is getting the touches and getting it to the guys. So I think you're right. I think you just have to have a scheme for, if this guy's killing you, how do you adjust? And with a shooter, you just can't slide off him. That's what teams did to Ryan Brown in the MLL when he played for the Hounds. They just put a guy on him and sat him in his pocket, and they made everyone else beat them, right? So I think you're going to see teams adjust to that. I think it takes a while too, but great points. And I think it's more the shot clock than the narrow field, to be fair.
Yeah, I was kind of half thinking that the Cannons were going to go crazy mode and put Goodrich on Sowers and just shut him off. And then the Water Dogs would spend like 20 seconds of the shot clock trying to get him the ball. And then Goodrich would just guard him.
They kind of did that for one possession.
Yeah. Well, they would switch. Yeah. They were just willing to switch picks. You know, they were just switching the picks, which is a whole nother conversation from nerdy coach, is like the number of bad pick defensive plays in week one was a little alarming. I think training camp should have been like, this is our pick plan. But
the highlight Tom Schreiber play where he goes down the left alley and then throws it back into his right hand and then sticks it. That, I think, is the poster of bad pick play, because he has a pull on him.
He walked it.
He walks over the pick, and he's not in like a threatening area. He could have just been going to walk over to swing it to the other side. They switched the pick, and he was like, what just happened? Like, what just happened?
Nice guy. I think he was just walking over to welcome Danny Logan to the league. And then Danny was just mesmerized by Tom Shriver's niceness, and he was like, hey, I'm going to guard you.
Yeah, something happened there. So that would honestly explain it better than, oh, yeah, we should switch this pick.
Like, you know what the best part about that play was? He stuck it near pipe.
Yeah.
With a hop.
Egregious.
I was like, oh, no. There are not many people in the league that can do that, in the world that can do that. And Tom Shriver was like, wait a minute. It's like he walked and was like, wait a minute. I'm Tom Shriver. Slam. It was awesome.
You guys are walking me right into, like, I told myself I wouldn't be critical, but you're walking me right into it, which gets us back to where this all started, which was Lyle.
Yeah,
I really felt like Eli Gobrek did a good job of forcing Lyle underneath. Like, Lyle managed to get Lyle to go to the least dangerous spot of the field, but for Lyle, it's like the most dangerous spot on the field. But the Water Dogs weren't ready to, like, be there. It was like Gobrek was like, I'm going to turn him here, thinking that someone might be there. But Lyle's so good there. And the other thing I wanted to say about Lyle, which I think is interesting, is the backhand goal, coming up the right hand and backhanding it, is obviously his move, right? And so at that point, when he's gumming up backhand, you just have to slide, because as remarkable as a backhanded goal is, a backhanded feed to the crease is that much more remarkable. And a backhanded through ball is impossible, even for a while. And so once he's coming up that side of the field, I think you just go early. Don't even let him shoot it backhanded. You make him have to pass it backhanded, which is that much harder than shooting it backhanded. And I just felt like Eli Gobrek did everything you could do, but the team just wasn't ready yet to be prepared for where Lyle was going to end up as a result of Eli trying everything he could do. But
yeah,
I'm trying not to be critical of the Dogs. That's my squad, but they didn't put their best effort.
Well,
they made
the right decision. They picked up the short stick D midi that they needed.
Yeah, well, their best offensive threat's out for a little while.
So what do they do? What do they do on offense?
Well, I want to say, like, the injuries, like, first of all, my take is it wasn't intentionally malicious, but it's definitely you should definitely be penalized for it.
Yeah, Kevin and I were talking about.
Yeah, what's your penalty for it, though? Me and Kat go on different sides of the bait ball here.
I think what happened is fine.
Yeah. Fine.
With the 2 minute.
What Patrick's argument, I could kind of get behind, I guess, but, like, I don't know. I don't think I can fully support it. But his argument is that it should be like college football, where regardless of intent, if you execute a play that is illegal to some sort of extent like that, that's in the head, regardless of your intent, it's an ejection. But those kids don't get, like, fined. And the reason you don't get fined is because it's not like the Apple play from last year where he's, like, cross-checking whoever it was on the ground, where, like, that is full-on malicious intent to hurt. Like, that's a finable offense.
It was God, that
the action in the play was just, you know, it happens. My take is that is totally different than what happened, and that Reese Eddy's just a little bit late, and that Michael Sowers is diving, so he's, like, flailing through the air, so he's sliding to a moving target, like, one step late, and, like, maybe he could have let up a little bit, but, like, I don't know.
I mean, that's can we talk about how it got set up in the first place? Like, why is your best player doing five dive shots to create offense for you when he's a feeder? What are you doing that makes him think that that's the best? And like, he's not selfish. Like, it's not his fault.
A lot of it was low clock, like low shot clock. There's nothing left. I have to go and make something happen, which means I'm going to get to a low angle because they're playing good defense.
Yeah.
And if I'm in a low angle situation, what do? I dive.
I just think that's an overuse of the technique.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you do it more than twice, people expect it. And the way to stop the dive is to – you are defenseless in the air. You are defenseless in the air. So you get physical with the guy that dives. Everyone has played in a tournament where like diving was legal and there's one dude that all he does is dive. And the first thing you do is you plant him. And that's the league. That's lacrosse. Like, I know that's probably not like not the most PC thing to say, but if that's your move, it's you got to have another move.
The hockey guy in Tommy Lyons came out big time. He was like, if he dives, whatever happens to him is his own. It's on his own. Like, he's asking for whatever like, happens. If he leaves Rocky. His feet on his own regards, yeah. He's asking for whatever.
He dies, he dies. I'm not going that far. Yeah. But you get my point, right? It's similar. It's just, I don't know. If it was malicious, I would think differently.
Yeah, I don't think it was malicious. I do think he had plenty of time, maybe not plenty of time, but he definitely had time to pull out. And the fact that it was to the head, cross check, and he was hospitalized overnight just makes it all the much worse. But I think it just segues into, let's talk about injury news. I do feel really bad for the Water Dogs and Chrome because they're two teams who really didn't have a great shot at a lot of wins this year, I don't think. And losing your two quarterbacks of the offense is really tough. So,
can someone clip that and send that to Tim Sudan?
Yep.
he's going to love – actually, it's good. He'll love it.
I actually have a thought on the Water Dogs offense, though. I think on how they unlock, and I think Kyle knows it.
What is it?
It's your boy.
Who's my boy? No, you're right. You could say it.
It's your boy, Mikey Schlosser.
That's right.
I think you get him coming downhill. And to Coach's point earlier about pick play, if teams are going to pull him, you can set an up pick for him and let him work. Maybe even set like a double and stagger it and let him sweep. But if you can get him coming downhill and then let like McArdle or something do something behind it, you're gonna get good offense of it. Yeah. But it starts with getting him loose downhill, in my opinion.
Or just have McArdle flare out, and then you have a hinge point to kick the ball. Like that's the thing that makes pro lacrosse offenses different is you have to have a two or three pass play. If you don't have a two or three pass play, like you will not score when you need to. When it's low clock, it's a 1-2 or three pass play. You cannot have like a four pass play or like an ISO just doesn't work because the defenders are too good individually. They're not great team. And that criticism is fair of PLL, but or any pro lacrosse league, but individually they're excellent. So it's a fair point.
Unless it's Lyle.
Right. Well, yeah. That's like sending a slide to like, I don't know, what's an unstoppable force? Like, Lyle is the most, he's the most unique player in the game because he beats you by adjusting to you. Everything that you do is an adjustment for him. And he goes, that's cute. Think like, you know, like there's no one like him. Hasn't been anyone like him since Mikey Powell.
Well, I'll pose the question, which team is worse off because of the injuries?
Chrome
or Water Dogs?
Chrome.
Well, the Chrome have two of them because they lost Stats and Wolf.
That's right.
Whereas the Water Dogs just have one and Sowers didn't show up till like Wednesday. So the Water Dogs actually beat I think it was the Chrome in a scrimmage before Sowers got there. Now, obviously it's a scrimmage, whatever, but they were doing some things without him, you know, and then they just kind of inserted him. I don't know. Part of me wonders if, like, you could play McIntosh at attack and Brown, yeah, and then just use their midfielders for all of the initiating, you know, like D3 lacrosse. Just to have your attackman catch and score. And yeah, and
they work too well for the Atlas, at least.
Yeah, well, different midfielders.
Yeah.
They didn't have the world's best teammate, Mikey Schlosser, on their midfield. So
yeah,
I think that's going to be what they're going to have to do, is just utilize their midfield to generate their offense, and then just try to get some Ryan Lee action out there, where short shot clock, throw it to McIntosh, make something happen. But I think the Water Dogs, they have a lot of good midfielders and, like, athletic midfielders. And I think once they figure out what the right combination is, I think they're going to be all right. But I will say, like, the Chrome picked up Palasek, right? Did I get that right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if you asked a lot of guys that have been in the league for a while, like, would you rather play with Tommy Palasek or Ben Reeves? I think we might be surprised how many people would pick Palasek. So they might have picked up a sleeper there.
I've never heard a bad thing about Palasek as a teammate.
He's awesome.
Yeah, like, just as a player, everything. Like, I mean, it goes back to, like, the point that started this whole podcast about, like, wow, that guy's not, like, actively playing right now. Like, how in the world is that possible? He's in that realm of, like, guy who definitely should be playing pro lacrosse and is just now getting his, like, chance at a roster spot. It's ridiculous.
The other guy that got picked up this week that I was advocating for in our PLL Slack was Brendan Sunday. I think he's a great pickup. He's somebody that, kind of to Coach's point earlier, he's going to get pegged potentially as a, you know, one kind of, you know, he's going to come out and kind of put his shoulder in and score. But if he gets slid to, he's not to the point where he can't just bail and become a feeder. So he's multiple in that sense, and I think he can make a, you know, impact for him.
His best use is high crease.
Yeah, and you can go inside and play inside if you need him to.
And getting mismatches. And with the Cannons, he's going to get that, right? Like, that's a place where you're going to get that regardless of the third midfield. I thought Class played better than Busek in the second game. So
Busek just didn't finish. If one or two of those two balls goes, then we're saying something different.
And the velocity was really down. I got to say, like, just watching
him. Kind of gobbled him up. And yeah, they were clean saves the other way.
Yeah, and they're no rebounds, none of that. Like, it was very, you know, maybe it's just getting to the right spots. And the thing I was worried about when I saw the Cannons is that, like, they're like the May-December romance of the league. It's like all these older players and all these rookies. And it's like, how are we going to make this work? I don't know. You know, someone's watching Matlock and someone's watching TikTok, you know, like, I don't know how that works. It'll be fun to watch, but is it a championship team? No, but I think the Cannons are way better than – they're definitely better than I thought they would be.
They are so much better than, like, a week ago we were – look at this roster. What the hell are they going to do?
Yeah.
And
– well, that's – I think that was the underestimating Rafis.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rafis is so important to what they were doing. I wasn't – Upgren and Wasserman and Busek, like, none of them. But again, you could say that about a lot of, you know, like, Ryder Garnsey wasn't his best. I think Kyle said this earlier, that, like, we got to give all these guys time to, it was one game, you know, and a lot of them are playing out of position. Like, Wasserman wasn't behind the goal much. So to give these guys, like, a little bit of time to kind of figure it out. But that's what I like about Sunday. He played midfield for the Blaze when they had Stats and Jackson and Palasek at attack. And I think he really is someone that has pro experience playing both positions. and therefore maybe a wiser pick than Wasserman, who's an attackman who runs to his right hand with speed. So I think picking him up and putting him in there could give him something, a little something, because he's got some, you know, he's got some experience.
Yeah.
And the last Blaze midfielder that got picked up, which we haven't talked about yet, who scores a goal every time he steps on the field, is Christian Mazzone. So if it works out the same for them as it did for the Archers, then. But Mazzone is my one of my sneaky picks. Mazzone, DiNapoli, those guys are animals.
DiNapoli leads the Water Dogs in midfield scoring.
Yeah.
With two goals.
Yeah, they had Rylan Reese had a two-pointer, so four of their 7 points came from those two guys.
And then Courier had one goal. Like,
but some of that was just like the amount of turnovers and like offsides and like they just had like first game. I think the Water Dogs, if the Water Dogs had done that in their first scrimmage, I think they won their first scrimmage by like 7 or 8 goals.
Yeah.
On that Tuesday. And if they had just done what they did and then, you know, the staff went to work on it, I think they win. Yeah, I think they win that. I wouldn't say I think they win that game, but it's a heck of a lot closer. It was just a little bit of a mess. So we don't even really know by the time. So we're being critical of them on offense, but by the time they actually really ever got the ball to play offense, they were down like 5 or 6 goals. Kind of like what you were saying about angry Rob Pinnell. You probably had a lot of angry guys just trying to make one thing happen at that point because they were down and reeling, as opposed to like the Archers who came out and were the Archers for the first like 3 minutes and up by 8 and everything was clicking and now everybody's happy and just sharing the ball.
I mean, Courier's always angry. Like, that's like his superpower. He's like the Hulk. He's always angry. So I'm surprised like he didn't get more runs. Schlosser didn't get more runs. The Water Dogs, I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what their identity is. I don't know.
They don't have one.
Yeah, they don't have one. And neither did the Atlas. Holy crap. What about like both those squads turned over more than anyone else except the Cannons. And actually, if you count the players that were on the Cannons last year in the MLL, it might be the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. If you think about that, that's insane. And expecting them to gel right away is unrealistic. So, yeah, I just think that they're worked their way through it to get to where they're going to be. But I don't know what either one of those teams are right now.
Well, which team is in the most, like, we don't know who they are. This year might just be it, like, complete, like, disaster for them.
It's both those teams. it really is.
Yeah. Those teams, and you add in the chaos.
Yeah.
And if – I don't know if we want to preview this weekend's games, but
– yeah.
That kicks off Friday night, Water Dogs Chaos, which are two kind of lackluster performances week one. I think Chaos just come out and just steamroll the Water Dogs, but anxious to hear what you guys think.
It's a loser leaves town match, right?
Pretty much.
In week two, loser leaves town.
We should make all of these into like old like WWF gimmick matches.
Yes, strap match,
boiler room match. Like, but the
cage.
I mean, like, but that like that chaos first quarter against the Whipsnakes, and like for all we've said about how like awesome the Whips are, and how like they are the clear team that like is a team. Knows what they're doing, is uber talented, everything is there. But that was just atrocious. Like that was the worst. That was the worst segment of lacrosse played this week.
Yeah,
was that first quarter by the chaos? Like, is that them, or is like where they started to be a little bit better in the second half?
It was them for four games in the bubble.
But yeah, then they went to the championship. Like so,
because of Blaze. Is why they went to the – everyone's like, oh, they did all this. It's like, well, they sat Connor Fields. Like, Blaze Reardon put – like, Someone, I think he's in the hospital because he broke his back carrying that team. Like, he is the reason they were good, not anyone else. And they got their matchups right in those other games. And, yeah. And again, pro lacrosse is about matchups. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's – I do think that's a pretty tasty game, though.
I think the Cats are going to lead the league in highlight goals, like just pretty goals. Either Josh Byrne's going to do something amazing and we're going to be like, holy – or they're going to tic-tac-toe, you know, some nation's pick look and you're going to be like, man, that was amazing ball movement. But they're going to be last in the league in total goals.
That's
good league in pretty goals, last in total
goals. Yeah,
they're
– effort they need to put in,
and they weren't clicking
in a crazy way.
It's going to take them a while to like click in that regard, and so they were just turning it over like crazy. They're the Atlanta Blaze of 2019, where stats would like drive up and throw a behind the back pass to Shane Jackson, and if he caught it, it was like an around the world finish. That was an amazing play, but that happened 1 out of 10 times. The other 9 times, they gave up a transition goal.
Yeah.
And they lost games like 21-19.
Yeah.
But it was entertaining and it was pretty lacrosse, but they just turned the ball over too much. And so did the Water Dogs. And I think of the two teams, the team who's going to clean it up the most between now and Friday is the Water Dogs.
Yeah.
They have more talent on defense. I'm taking the Water Dogs.
Yeah.
And like,
for all
those like, you know, miracle plays you're talking about that on offense that they need. Like, I feel like they tried to do them on defense and also did not execute. Like, the first ground ball of the game, I think it was Johnny Serdak, just, like, did not do a fundamental ground ball. It saves the possession for the Whipsnakes. They score. And then you have Jared Newman trying to go over the head with Matt Rambo, and that just ends in absolute disaster. And Rambo just, like, easily scores that goal and makes him just look silly. Like, how many, like, you can't be, like, you can't do those, like, you know, Hail Mary plays in every aspect of everything you do and expect to win.
Yeah, definitely. I like your stick, bro.
They're interesting. We got Ian McKay playing LSM, and I think Troy Ray took reps playing long stick and reps playing short stick in the same game, so... They're the complete opposite on defense, I think, than like the Whips and the Redwoods, who have like their personnel kind of figured out and dialed in.
I'm a big Dane train. I like watching Dane Smith initiate. I think they should go to him more. And I'd be interested to see if they go to Cloutier more on Friday night. But I'm really excited.
Basically, that's great. Cloutier. Like, he's lost a lot of weight and, like, looks like...
He barely touched the ball, it seemed like. But first primetime game, Saturday, Whipsnakes, Cannons, two teams we've been pretty much talking the most about on this podcast. I think it's going to be phenomenal. Noon game, going to be classic.
Matt Dunn, Lyle Thompson, it's a good showdown.
Yeah.
First NBC game, right? You mean?
Right. Yeah. Not Rob game. But yeah, like you said, Dunn versus Lyle. I mean, that's worth the price of admission in itself.
Are you guys ballsy enough to take the Cannons?
No. Well, that was really quick. Sorry. No.
Yeah. I mean, but like, why can someone tell me why Matt Dunn is the best defensive player in the league?
I'll give it a shot. Can I give it a shot?
Yeah. Someone who is smarter, and I was basically posing that question for you.
Well, I think that's the answer. I think he pays a lot of attention to the littlest details. And I don't mean, you know, like, so – Glazner's getting a lot of, you know, press because of his like quarterbacking and all the stuff that Glazer's saying out loud about what the other team's like scheme is, Matt Dunn guards the ball with that same intentionality. And so it's, he's not doing it with like athleticism. And so someone like Jared Newman's more athletic than him. And he's not doing it with brute force like Tucker Durkin or intimidation. It's just the littlest details. And so he's going to know when Lyle steps this way, he likes to do that. And he's going to be able to think like one step ahead. And then on top of it, like, he works at his craft, you know, like he, but I think it's like an intentionality about the little details when he's covering the ball. I think he's just very smart.
Yeah. The best defenders make you uncomfortable. And that's what he specializes in, is making pro level players uncomfortable. That's what makes him a great defender. And it's not with checks, right? It's with his positioning and trying to make you think that you want to go here and you don't, you know, or they have a slide ready if you do this. Like that trust as well.
It makes you mentally uncomfortable, not physically uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah. Like you're mentally uncomfortable matching against him because he knows what you're going to do. And that's really like, the people think that, and I think Coach will back me up with this, and so will Cap. Like, people think that defensemen are made to take the ball away. Defensemen are not there to take the ball away from you. It's gravy and frosting if they do. The job of a defenseman is to make you uncomfortable the whole time you're playing, physically, mentally, any other way that they can do it, to alter what you're going to do. And Dunn is the best at that in the league, and that's why he's the best defender.
The other thing I love about him is he's not your, like, stereotypical cover guy where it's, like, he only cares about his matchup. Mm-hmm. Like, he gets involved and is part of the team defense and can orchestrate the defense and talk through anything and is buttoned up on pick play and does all of that while guarding the other team's best player. You know, like, that is impressive.
Yeah. Well, what is it that Patrick always says? Like, you're a great defenseman.
Yeah, you can't be a good defenseman if you can only guard one person.
Yeah.
You have to be able to guard more than one person in every possession in order to actually be considered a good defenseman.
I think he and Lyle are teammates in indoor too. Is that right? I know he plays indoor for the Swarm, or did. And that probably helps him too, that he guards some of these guys that, you know, he's not just like an American defender, you know. He's able to guard the Canadians and the natives and the American guys. And so that kind of alternative style that he might see from week to week, I think he's got some experience with. But he's the real deal. Great guy too.
Yeah, we had him come do some coaching at our event in the summer for that IDX event that we run each year. And he was incredible in that. And to your point about being super particular and super detail oriented, like, you absolutely saw it while he was coaching. Like, he was very particular, you know, hey, you have to make sure your stick is on this angle, your feet are on this angle, you know, this foot should be in front of this foot about, you know, this split and, you know, like that type of stuff. He's like very detail oriented.
Those Maryland guys.
Yeah, it doesn't stop with him. It's Earhart, it's Young, it's all those guys. Bernhardt down there.
It'd be interesting to see if Grill gets in the lineup at all this year with those guys.
I think he should. I don't know who you replace, but
tough close defense to crack. Maybe a second LSM.
You know, Tim Mullen's still there. So
yeah, Tim Mullen's hard.
Yeah, I mean, like, do they, like, as a roster, like, do they, like, in random weeks in the middle of the year, like,
keep people fresh?
Yeah, put Grill in the lineup and put Muller in the lineup and, like, sit one of those
guys each week.
Yeah, Ocean City's this week. Play this guy. I don't know.
So we're all in agreement. Whip snakes over cannons.
Yeah, I think we're all on the snakes.
Yeah, let's be bulletin board material. Let's go.
For the next one, too. Woods over Atlas, 3 p.m., Peacock, NBC Sports Network, Saturday.
I mean, Atlas are going to have to do a whole lot to make me forget about last weekend.
Yeah, zero faith in the Atlas. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Zero.
Yeah, I don't know how you can pick again. Like, that seems like a, like, if you're picking the Atlas in that game, you're picking it to try to, like, be different and, like,
right,
you know, be the person who has the weird pick that no one else does. Like,
it's like how Terry does his picks. Who didn't pick this? I will pick this. Yes. No. They are dressing Craig Chick, from per sources. So I think that'll help. And, you know, that's, I don't know why he didn't dress the first week, because apparently he had a great camp. I think he's a great player. He's one of the best, like, swing cover guys to go midfield to deep. He does throw a few too many takeaway checks if you're going to nitpick, but his stick skills are great. He's got
NBA
that
public school, baby.
He's got that Lehigh pedigree. And I like him. I think he's a very underrated defender.
Well, he used to do that all the time at Lehigh, where he'd be on wings and, like, kind of just, like, phase back,
yep,
like, throughout the defensive possession. And he would, like, basically be the, like, depending on the matchup, would be the cover guy, but he would also, like, he'd be the off-ball guy, like, if the matchup wasn't quite right. He's awesome. And he's, you know, he's a coach too. So, like, I think there's definitely something to be said for, like, these guys who are coaches and who are living this, like, fully in it and digesting all the film and watching all the film and all that stuff. Like, those guys are just, like, they've gained an appreciation for it after college that maybe others haven't.
Yeah.
I don't know that I can go as far as to say the Atlas is going to win, but I will go as far as to say it's going to be closer than I think people think.
I think
Baptiste is going to be a tougher matchup for TD. I like that the Atlas were using John Crawley a little bit more as kind of like their Stephen Rafis, like their kind of pride you a little bit while we're looking to get things started. I think Joel Tinney is going to be really good this year. I think Joel Tinney is going to, like, have a breakout year, and I think Concannon will settle down and play better. And I think as you combine all that, and I think they're not playing the Archers. And so as I combine all that, I'm thinking, you know, maybe, and again, I've told myself I wasn't going to be critical of people, but going off of what Kyle was saying about matchups, I thought IDA for the Redwoods looked a little questionable, almost like he might have been hurt. And I think if, like, he has to match Joel Tinney's kind of, like, stop and goes and quicknesses, and when Nick Osello announced his retirement, I said to someone close to me, I bet he would have dressed over IDA this week. And so I think that's a matchup to watch. I felt like Jack Neer and Harbison are two pretty good ones there, but when IDA came in, he just didn't look himself for some reason. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. I could see this one being closer.
No, you're definitely right about
Ken
IDA.
Ken Clawson will get Tucker Durkin into, like, another planet, and then Tucker Durkin will go out and just
Brandon, which team does your son root for?
Well, that's the thing. He's a Bulldogs fan.
He's got a love-hate relationship.
My 7-year-old is a Water Dogs fan. He's significantly more a Water Dogs fan as of Wednesday than he was on Monday. But he's in the Water Dogs camp. We're big Ryan Brown fans in this house, and we're big D3 guys in this house. And so Gobrecht, Witcher. I kind of assume BJ Grill's a D3 guy. Like, most defensemen his size play D3. So we'll take BJ Grill. Okay. We like the Water Dogs.
Those are my people.
But we also
Coach Ponytail. Can't forget Coach Ponytail.
Yeah, we like the Archers. We're big Ryan Jenner fans, so we're free agents. But right now, we're in the Water Dog camp.
I find myself varying a little bit too. As long as Witcher's on the team, though.
Well, every team has a guy, you know, like, yeah. And sometimes you even forget who your guys are. Like, you're watching the Archers, and you're like, man, Schreiber, oh my God, that's right, Christian Mazzone is on the Archers. Like, they're my favorite team. That happens almost every game. Some guy that you forget is on that team that was like your favorite guy. But it's hard not to like the Archers.
I think that's what like the league was designed for. It's like these kind of individual oriented kind of fandoms.
Right.
Yeah, but it's like it's funny because like I can make an argument for every team of why that team is my favorite.
I actually chaos. Did that in my season.
What three. Is your argument for the chaos?
I love Connor Fields. Well, he's not there anymore. Never mind. Yeah. That was my argument last year, so maybe I don't have one now.
Max Adler is a good dude.
No, Max is definitely like – I love Max. Blaze is like – I thought Blaze was the – like when Albany had their like run of – they're just like their height of Albany lacrosse. Like Blaze was like as much a part of that as anyone. And I don't think he necessarily got the credit for that. And I think that's in addition to just like his ball stopping, but like he was like in many ways the heartbeat of that team. So I love Blaze. So there's that. And also I just like the general like vibe of the like, you know, obviously the border issue is a problem, but like, you know, the Canadian box influence, like you can love the team just for that reason.
But, and you have AT.
Hmm?
Do you love Andy Towers?
I mean, he's like the most entertaining figure in the sport right now, and he's not even playing on the field.
I interviewed him a couple years ago, and I was like, I met him in person in Florida for the first training camp. And I was like, dude, what is your workout routine? This doesn't make any sense. Because like, he's like a brick of muscle up top. And his arms are like, he's like 20-inch biceps. I'm like, what are you doing? And he told me. And then the next week I went and did it. And I thought I was going to die. I was like, oh, this is awful. Oh, no. No, thank you. No, thank you. But it makes sense. And he explained it. It's like, you don't get injured doing this. And I'm like, yeah, but you might die doing it. So I'm probably not going to do it again. But he's like the ultimate, like you watch, he's like very theatrical with everything he does. So you kind of have to respect that in a way. You know, even when you talk to him on the phone and it's off record, I talked to him for like something I wrote last year about when he played for the Barrage in the MLL. And he was just like, dude, I don't remember anything. You know, like he was just telling these crazy stories. Like, I think one time we went to this place and he has a story for everything. And they're all stuff that you can't use, but it's really cool to listen to. You know, like he's one of those guys that gives you everything. And you're like, I can't use this though, but thank you. This was a great experience. And I think that's how his players relate to him too, you know? And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, you know?
And like, you know, but it's like when it comes to like the, who's the most likable team in the league from top to bottom, it's Archers, right? Like it's that's Archers. Like the answer.
Yeah,
yeah. Like
what? Yeah. It depends. It depends what lens you're looking through.
It's very easily the Whip Snakes for me. They're well-oiled machine. Like mentality of just like rolling through you is just like it's so admirable, though.
This is how you and I are so different.
Well, they're
like I love them, but not in the way that you said that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I respect it, but I'm not.
You have
like,
to admire like their discipline and like. The way that everybody knows their role and they just come out and just are better than you. And Matt Rambo is awesome and like fun to cheer for. And his mic'd ups are always entertaining. Like they have so much going for them. I've also been very, very, very clear about my feelings towards John Haas to multiple of, like, many of you. So
they are the villains, though.
Who cares?
Yeah, they're more of the team that, like, Rambo said it, I think, like, mic'd up this week. Like, you either hate us or you love us. That's their total vibe. So yeah. Archers are definitely more likable. Coach Childs, if you're game planning against them with chaos, how would you go about that for Sunday afternoon's matinee?
Good question, Kevin.
So I'm the chaos coach, the chaos you personnel, and I'm game planning Archers.
Yep. On the spot.
Oh boy. All I can think of is Ian McKay is gonna have to guard Tom Schreiber. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know.
He might be out. He might be out. He's questionable.
Yeah, lower extremity.
He's playing.
Yeah, Schreiber's gonna play. I think. Whew. I don't know. I don't. You stumped me. I. The Archers is the one team that I watched the least, because the game kind of got out of hand pretty quickly there with the Atlas. So I didn't win. And the scary thing is all the goals, like, it was like Alexander scored and Latrell Harris scored and Mazone was scoring and Ryan McNamara had three. Like, they were doing it with guys that we haven't said one word about this whole time. So that's scary to think. I think I'd have a plan for any kind of pick, you know, and it's almost like just make sure you have a plan for the picks, not necessarily for me to say what that plan should be, but all the picks that are coming to Schreiber and the picks with Ryan Ambler and some of the chemistry that those two have, like, if anything, just be disruptive with the pick and try to bully them. You know, I felt like some of the bad defense that I saw over the weekend, no matter which team it was a little bit as a result of, like, not getting hands on guys. So be physical with Schreiber, be physical with Grant. And, like, they're good players that are going to get a step on you anyway. So you might as well get a chunk of them while they're going. And so I guess for short answer, I'd say, you know, have a pick plan, make that pick plan confrontational and get physical with them, you know, make them earn a slide by running back pass some physicality or disrupt the timing of their feet or their shot by getting one last bump on their hip. But obviously easier said than done.
I do like how they let that go in the PLL when kind of the pick defender can just, like, shove the screener a little bit, get him out of his desired place.
Yeah, no, yeah. Moving that screener a little bit and steering him out of the dangerous spots is – definitely part of your pick play.
That's not new.
Yeah.
That's
good riches.
That's for pro defense, man. Like, they've been doing that for a while. They let that go. Yeah. That's the one thing.
Good riches. Yeah, we tried that at York back in 2017. We were playing Washington League. They set a lot of picks, and we were called for some penalties pretty quickly in that game. First game there. Tried to implement some pro lacrosse into the scout, and the next thing you know, we're man down.
Yeah, well, in the very first instance of it happening, the picker or the guy guarding the picker for us wasn't exactly subtle about it. It's not like he got up on his back and, like, kind of moved him. He basically just walked up to him and cross-checked him in the back.
Yeah. So I guess that's what I'm saying. Go with that approach. Hopefully the refs won't call it.
All the mic'd up is one thing that, like, the fan in me loves, but at the same time, the coach in me loves at the same time. And being able to hear it and getting into the Redwoods huddle when they were playing the Cannons and hearing them talking about, like, hey, like, we need to be more confrontational with Lyle as he's coming off those picks. Like, that was awesome. That was really, really cool.
I love the mic'd up. I hate the two-way communication between the player on the field and the broadcast team. I understand.
Do you hate it because it's bad or because it never works?
Both.
Yeah. Both. Yeah. I understand the, like, if it worked in a perfect world, it would be great.
Yeah. Like the few times it does work, it's cool. It's like when he's like, Lyle, what'd you see at the end of the, like, how cool is it scoring that first goal of the season? He was like, I don't know. There's the shot clock was.
He's like, I had to go.
How much of a flex was it? Boyle's question is, what made you decide to go to the back end? And he goes, oh, well, the defender decided that. I decided based on the defender.
No, but
he had no shot of stopping me. And whatever he did, I was just going to do the opposite and score. Duh.
But 75% of the time, it's they're like holding their ear and saying, like, can you repeat what you said?
Yeah. Rambo would never hear that. Rambo never.
And then, like, there's that they're just out of breath and, like, they're trying to describe something that they just did instinctually 20 seconds prior to that. And it's never, like, something that they can, like,
articulate.
Yeah, like, really, like, clear, like, concise vocabulary.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm kind of like, I would rather hear the dodge and hear the physicality of the dodge than hear someone describe the dodge.
Yeah, it's a good point.
You don't want to hear Latrell Harris be amped up on the sideline with Paul Burmeister?
Throwing an F-bomb as fast as he could.
That was great. But yeah, I think – so what the last game we haven't talked about is, I guess, we kind of mentioned it, Chrome Water Dogs, which is before Chaos Archers on Sunday.
I mean, this is the – is this the most pure toss-up of the weekend?
I would say so.
Like,
given the injuries, yeah, I would say.
Yeah, so. Like it's kind of like the like you just don't know game of the weekend.
I want to see the rosters before I pick that, because I think there's more stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah,
as in
my instinct.
Sure. Like we were talking about Rafis being Rookie of the Year, front runner now. Like if Jackson Morrill, I mean, I don't think he'll come close to winning it, but like he'll definitely have more of an impetus for the offense. Maybe not with Palisic, but it'll be interesting to see. I think I'll go with Water Dogs in this one.
How is Justin Anderson playing?
He looked good.
Like, I mean, like, I mean, how, like, with just having a kid and, like.
Oh, like, how is he playing?
Yeah, how is he, like, allowed to do that and able to go to training camp and then, you know, make a roster and all that stuff? Like, his wife is the MVP. He played in that first round game and slept for 8 hours, like, after his wife gave birth. It's incredible. Yeah,
that's a great question. I was wondering how I was allowed to watch it. So,
I think the Water Dogs are bonding with the boys.
Yeah, those 12-minute quarters are clutch because it's always like 4 minutes left in the quarter. So I can be like, oh, I can go take the trash out. There's only 4 minutes left in the quarter. Like whenever I need to go do some sort of family responsibility. It's under 4 minutes whenever those requests happen. So.
So let me ask you guys a question. What do people that don't watch pro lacrosse think when you're watching it? Like, do they have an opinion on it? I put it on, like, I was at my parents and I was just there to hang out for like the week. Cause it was my, my sister's birthday and my dad's birthday. And I just put it on in the background and then I just sat down. And then everyone else sat down and we just watched, you know, luckily the Archers and just sat there. And my dad's just like, this team is tearing them apart. I'm like, yeah, isn't it awesome? And he's like, yeah, it's pretty great. Who's that guy? You know, like, does that happen to you guys at all?
It's funny. Cause like, I mean, it's just like, and like how many times in life can you just like, do you just casually, like, are you just sitting in front of TV with another, like, adult and, like, can just be like, this is on, let's watch it together? That doesn't happen that often, unless you're at a bar, which right. is, like, the, like, but every time that has happened, I mean, obviously, I'm always the, like, I'm just answering a million questions the entire time that it is going on.
Yeah.
Like, do you know this person? Or, you know, like, what is going on here? But, like, I think everyone is always intrigued and entertained at the very base level of like what I think is like the, you know, I want to watch this on a bar on TV, but like, I don't understand the, like, how do you get to that next level of like fandom?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of where it goes to, but to your point about like family and stuff, like I've also like every year for the past 10 years, since I've worked on Inside the Cross, my parents have invited me to a cookout on Memorial Day. So like, it is like very tough to like, you know, really like permeate that layer outside of like kind of what we've got in this group right here in terms of like understanding it. But like, I've never seen someone who's been like, turn this off, I don't understand what it is. Everyone is always like at least intrigued by it. And that's like, there's a lot to say about that, you know, in terms of like just that initial like, well, this is fast and fun and kind of piques my interest. Like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Anyone else?
I'd agree. I was watching with some college buddies actually, and like a lot of them had just like connections in kind of some way, shape, or form to at least like someone on the field. So they at least like knew what was going on mostly. But they were just more interested in, like, I do think like 10 yards out of the middle of the field, shorter shot clock, all those things that make the game faster are definitely making it more watchable and stuff. And like kind of what we haven't touched on, what you said last week, Kyle, is the merchandising is just so much better. So
yeah,
I think that also helps.
By the way, while we've been on this, Chris Hogan is officially making his debut Saturday.
Ooh.
Adam Schefter reporting within the past hour while we're doing this.
That's pretty incredible. I wonder how they're going to use him. I guess as a short stick DB, right?
On the wing.
Use him on offense. Just on the wings?
Just on the wings.
Someone on a 19-man roster to put him on the wings?
Yes.
Bryce Wasserman died so Chris Hogan could live.
R.I.P. Monmouth in your mentions. That's brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it's the NBC game. Like, you know, whatever. Like, that's like one of the things that, like, I don't know. I hope he does well. Like, that would be awesome if he was great.
I think people think we're, like, rooting against him. I'm not rooting against the dude. I don't root against players. I want him to do well because it makes the league look better. And it makes
how awesome would it be if, better. Yeah, how awesome would it be if a super – was he – I mean, he's a guy who caught touchdowns in Super Bowls.
Yeah.
Like, how great would that be if he was an awesome lacrosse player who came out there and just tore it up and, like, brought a lot of attention to the league? I just don't see it. I just don't see how you can come in and pick up the sport after so many years off when there's so many talented players who are just either coming off of college seasons or have been in this pro mix for so long. You know, I just don't see him being a factor.
That's why you play him on the wing. That's where he's going.
They're not going to use him in a role that's going to create a stat line that's going to be intriguing. Like, he's not going to go out there instead of Rabel and Busick, right? So they're going to use him in, you know, he's going to be their third short stick defensive midfielder.
Who's he going to dress over?
Behind Goodrich and Bell. That's how they're going to use him. So it's not going to be some, like, amazing story of him, you know, leading the league in scoring or anything like that. I think he's going to be the third short stick defensive midfielder. And, you know, just the same as you would take a chance on, like, a D2 or D3 short stick defensive midfielder, you'd take a shot on a former NFL Super Bowl champion. And if it works, it's great. And if not, back to the player pool. So,
yeah, like, I'm wondering whose spot he takes. You know, I think by the time that we post this, rosters won't be out until Friday, I think, is kind of what they're going with in terms of like when we're going to see like 19-man rosters. I mean, does he take Bell's spot?
Do they play on Friday?
No, Saturday.
The NBC game.
The NBC game against the Chiefs.
He probably takes Upgren's spot.
Yeah.
That's who it is.
Yeah.
It's either or Dugan, right? Dugan?
Yeah, it's Dugan.
Dugan?
Yeah. But Dugan's good, so no.
Yeah, you need Dugan to play.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
it might be Bell. But I think it's probably one of those, like, swinger attack guys that they said could play midfield.
That isn't, right?
Right.
My money is on Dugan.
This is, to your point earlier, like, this is the part of the PLL that really fascinates me. The 19-man rosters, who you're going to dress, how you're going to orchestrate everything, how you make that fit to your plan, how your plan fits to your roster. Like, that's the part of this all that really, really fascinates me.
This is not new. It's the frustration of 15 years, man. I'm sorry. It's not you. It's me. I love it. It's hard. It's like sharing it with everyone when you've, like, this is, like, all you've cared about. And people, like, literally made fun of you for caring about the MLL and pro lacrosse for, like, the entire time you covered it. And now it's like, oh, it's the PLL. I love this. This is great. And you're just like.
So 2 years ago on my bachelor party, it was on at the bar. And I was, like, avoiding, you know, taking shots and watching the game. And they're like, what are you doing? Like, what are you watching? Like, it's pro lacrosse. It's cool. It's awesome. They're like, shut up. The only people who care about that are you and the middle schoolers. And now the same people that were making fun of me 2 years ago are, like, pulling up and watching the games.
That's awesome.
Single tear just ran down my cheek.
But I think that's a good – with we're getting into sad Kyle territory, so this isn't
– Oh, yeah, I'm sad. I'm off the podcast. Bye.
So I think – and it's also 11 o'clock at night, and I know this is well past my bedtime. So probably a good a spot as any to end, but this has been fun. I mean, it's like I said, free form. We didn't have a plan. We didn't have an outline. We just kind of went with it. Coach Childs joined us after getting a text message, literally after we already had started. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Before I go, I do want to go on record to take the Water Dogs.
Oh,
we didn't pick the last game. And I want to go on record to say the Water Dogs are winning it.
Well, let's go. Let's end with going around the room for this one, and I'm going to take the Chrome, and Kevin will go with you for the next pick.
Yeah, Mari said the Water Dogs. Agree with that one.
I'm on the Dogs too, for what it's worth. We are on the Dogs.
Wow.
Always bet on pseudo. I take the Chrome.
Always bet on pseudo. It's a good way to live. So, cool. Well, everyone who's listening to this, hit us up on any, you know, on Twitter. Let us know what you want to see. Let us know if you want to bring in anyone special. But this has been fun. We're going to talk lacrosse all year because we love doing it. So this is what it's all about. This is the PLL Happy Hour. Thank you for listening or watching. Summer comes, now that the boys are here again.